Yes, I know life is hard, but so in the last lecture we've discussed phenomenology of quantum Hall effect, right? So let's briefly recall. So turns out that if you have three simple ingredients, so you have 2D electron gas, with some amount of disorder and strong quantizing magnetic field, then turns out that transport coefficients show really remarkable behavior. So sigma xx as a function of the carrier density shows 0 values in some intervals of densities, and between those values it reaches value of the order of v squared over h times some numerical constant of order 1, and sigma xy shows even more striking behavior. So it shows quantization at integer multiples of e squared over h, and so on, right? So you can see this quantization up to pretty big integers, let's say in certain materials of the order 50 or something like that. So first of all, let's ask why is disorder important? Okay, so and let me start by very general argument, which would involve only translational invariance and Lorentz transformations, right? Which would show us that if you have a clean two-dimensional electron gas without disorder, then you can never get such a behavior of the Hall conductivity. So, and we will start with this very, very general and simple argument. And then we will proceed to studying the spectrum and the effects of disorder and transport. So let's consider clean 2D electron gas. What I can do, right? I can consider my 2-deg without any electric field, but then let me go to the frame which is moving with some velocity v. Frame then. In this frame, so two things are going to happen. So first of all the electrons would be moving with velocity minus v, right? So which tells you that there would be electric current. So with current density minus nEv, right? This is would be current density. But second thing that's going to happen. So since I have magnetic field on, right, if I go to the moving frame, then when I make a Lorentz transformation, I induce electric field, right? So Lorentz transformation would give me, assuming that this velocity is much less than the speed of light, right, it would give me that the electric field is given by minus 1 over C V cross B. Okay? So this tells you that in this frame, right, I have electric field, I have roughly the same magnetic field, and I have current in the transverse direction. So then I can get rid of this velocity and relay the current density to the electric field, and then what I would get is that electric field is B over n E C J dot Z J cross Z. Right, so from here you can read off resistivity tensor right away. Right, so clearly diagonal component of the resistivity tensor is zero, right, because current is flowing perpendicular to the electric field, and off diagonal component is given by B over NEC, and so, and here is the same but with a minus sign, right, because of rotational invariance. So quite simply, what we got is that so if you translate it to the whole conductivity, you will see that sigma xy goes as essentially n is proportional to n, right? So you would see that for the clean case, sigma xy would go linearly as a function of the carrier density. Right, so there could be no plateaus whatsoever. Right, so this line would be clean to dag. Right, and this tells us that really disorder must be important here. Okay. So now let's go ahead and really study the spectrum and study how electron states in this quantum limit carry current. So let's talk about quantum dynamics in strong B field. So since we've established that this is an essentially quantum effect, right, and disorder, so essentially strong quantum effects on the spectrum come before the effects of disorder, right? So let's first find the spectrum without disorder, and then we will add disorder and see how it changes things, right? So let's neglect disorder for now and find the spectrum. So first of all, let me pick the gauge for the magnetic field, and for me it would be convenient to pick the vector potential in the Landau gauge, right? So one component of vector potential is non-zero and the other is zero. Okay, and so clearly this corresponds to the right magnetic field directed along z direction, right? Now my electron Hamiltonian is simply in this gauge. Takes the following form, and you notice right away that y momentum commutes with the Hamiltonian, and I can search for solution in the following form, right? So I can say that momentum along y is fixed, and then it is just a function, right? So it's just a function of the x. Right, I k y, y psi k y of x, and for this function, for the component of the wave function that depends on the x coordinate, I get an effective Hamiltonian. right? So where the effective Hamiltonian, effective one-dimensional Hamiltonian, is given by so here I've introduced two scales which correspond to magnetic field, which are the cyclotron frequency and the magnetic length L here. Okay, so now you see that this one-dimensional Hamiltonian is really a Hamiltonian of a harmonic oscillator, right? With zero shifted by this value. Okay, so so this quantity has the dimension of length, right? So let me call it X capital, the guiding center position. And you'll see in a second the role that it's playing. Yeah?
What is the difference between the capital H and small
h? So capital H acts on the wave function, which depends on x and y. And little h acts on only the x component of the wave function. So this is the guiding center position. So then I can find the spectrum of this right away. So for the nth excited level of the harmonic oscillator, I get the energy n plus a half h omega c, right? This is the eigen energy. And the wave function psi k y of x, right, would be simply Hermite polynomial this is just the eigenfunction for the harmonic oscillator. Now, important thing here is that you see that energies do not depend on this guiding center position, right? So, which tells you that the spectrum becomes flat, right? So there are discrete bands. So let me plot the energy. So they start from h omega c over 2. Then I get 3 half h omega c, 5 half h omega c, and so on. Right, so this is my spectrum. And the wave function, so I could also, let me also plot the wave function's profile, right, as a function of the x coordinate. So for each ky, I have some guiding center position, right? And then in the lowest Landau level, wave functions are just the ground state of the magnetic oscillator, which are centered at ky L squared, right? Right, so as I change value of ky, right, my wave function shifts in the x direction, right? Landau level wave functions have the same structure for the higher levels, except now I have to consider excited levels of the magnetic oscillator, right? Let's say for the first one, I'll have a wave function with a node, right? And I would have such a wave function for every value of the momentum in the transverse direction, right? So you see that in magnetic field, momentum along y and position in the x direction are directly related, right? So there is this kind of momentum space duality, and that's going to be important. Momentum real space duality. Okay? So now another important question is, so we got this, right? We got complete spectrum reconstruction by strong magnetic field. So we have this massively degenerate bands, and natural question to ask is how many states can each of these bands accommodate? So I can answer this question by using this picture essentially. So let me consider a sample which has size Lx, Lx times Ly, right, in the x direction and in the y direction. Then you see that since my wave function in the x direction depends on ky, right, this puts a limit on the possible values of ky. So ky times L squared must be in the interval between 0 and Lx. Okay? So then I know that the number of states in a given lambda level is proportional, of course, to the size in the y direction, integral from 0 to Lx over L squared dky over 2 pi over 2 pi h. Or actually, let me skip this h because I already skipped it here. So then you see that the number of states is just Lx Ly, right, over 2 pi L squared. So L here is the magnetic length. So I could rewrite it. Right, so I could rewrite it saying that there is one state per area 2 pi L squared. So what is this area? So let me express it in terms of magnetic field. So this is flux quantum divided by the magnetic field. Okay? So you see that this is really, so where the flux quantum is just expressed in terms of h bar c and electron charge. Right, so you see that really these lambda levels can accommodate a single state per flux quantum of the external magnetic field. So this is the structure of the spectrum without any disorder. So now let's proceed to thinking about the transport. Transport in the lambda levels. So first of all, for the clean case, you see that these bands are flat, right? So what does it mean for band to be flat? It means that the group velocity is always zero. Okay, so this tells you that clean Landau level cannot carry any current, right? So and let's check this explicitly. So let's consider a single Landau level and let's just show that the current density for a given state is zero, right? So for simplicity, let me consider lowest lambda level, right? Zeroth lambda level. Right? Then the wave function for a given momentum ky is given by right, so this is just a normalization factor. And the current operator is just electron charge times the velocity, right? So it would be E over m p plus p plus the vector potential. For example, I could now consider average current along y direction for this state, right? So let me do that, and we will immediately see that this is gonna be zero. Okay, so all I need to do is take this matrix element. Then I have another contribution from the ket wave function here, right? So, okay, now what we can do, we can notice that this expression, right, is nothing but EB over C, x minus, this becomes KY L squared. Right, so and by definition, this is the guiding center position. So this becomes x minus x capital. Right, and you see right away that because this expression is anti-symmetric with respect to x capital point, right, and the rest is symmetric, this whole integral vanishes. But it also tells you that the current density, if you were to think about current density as a function of x coordinate, it is asymmetric, right? So it's positive, positive to the left of the guiding center position, right? And negative to the right. Right. So current density is asymmetric. And this has a simple quasi-classical interpretation, because you know, if you think about just cyclotron motion, right, motion is periodic such that, of course, on average there is no current, right, but there is some current here and some current here, right? So there is positive current on this side and a negative current on this side, right? So this is an intuitive quasi-classical interpretation. So now, yeah.
What do you mean by flat bands in this context?
I mean that usually, right? Usually, when you think about a solid, right? You have some. So you have some Bloch bands. So if you draw them as a function of momentum, right? They have some dispersion. So epsilon changes, mm-hmm. right? And so and velocity, group velocity is given by the derivative d epsilon over dk, right? So but here, right, here I have a situation which is quite strange, because my bands are flat, right? If I plot Landau levels, they look like that.
But doesn't it depend on ky?
No. Oh, that's the point, right? So you see that's what we showed here, right? Right, so here we found that energy, right, it's really, really something very dramatic happens to the spectrum in strong magnetic field, right? So you start with a continuum spectrum with dispersion, and then you end up with flat bands. Mm-hmm. So, and that's why you see, right, that if epsilon is constant within the band, then the velocity is zero, right? So they cannot, in some sense, they cannot move, right? Now, Things change, however, if you add some disorder to the problem. And so, and let me consider first a very simple disorder profile. Right, let me, as usual, consider simplified problem, which however would teach us pretty much everything that we need to know about the effect of disorder. So now let's add disorder. And so disorder means that there is some spatially varying potential profile, okay? But let me consider the most trivial spatially varying profile, which is just a linearly varying potential along X. Right, so this is always a good approximation. If your potential fluctuations are very smooth and very slow, right, then you can, at a given point, you can expand your potential to the linear order, right? Just keep the gradient.
But it depends
on your next. Yeah, so because I can imagine, right? I can always redefine my coordinates, yeah. Right? Because of course here X is different from Y just because of the gauge I picked. But I could always, right, if I encounter some disorder configuration where, let's say, if I look at the disorder profile as a function of x and y, right, let's say there are lines of constant potential, right, and at a given point, let's say gradient is pointing in this direction, right, then I can always change the gauge and call this x and this y, right. So that's why this problem, you know, it sounds way too simplified, but it will teach us, it will give us a lot of intuition about what happens in the general case. So what will happen if we add this electric field? So we can just go ahead and generalize our analysis here, right? Because we can just say that, okay, so all this changed now. Right, this still commutes with the momentum along y. Right, so I can, all I have to do, I have to solve this Hamiltonian hky with this extra term. Right, and that I can do. Right, so this was my Hamiltonian before, and now I add this disorder term. So I can absorb this linear term by redefining guiding center position. Right, so x prime equals x minus ee over m omega c squared. And then my problem again, it becomes a harmonic oscillator which is displaced, plus there would be a constant shift in energy which we'll get to. Huh? Yeah.
Sorry, so in the previous part you also mentioned the disorder and you give the clean two-dimensional graph, but why in this case you said adding the electron field
Ah, okay, good point. So what is disorder, right? Disorder, it means that there is some spatially varying potential V of XY. Right? Now let me make a simplifying assumption. Let me assume that disorder scale typical scale on which the disorder is varying, right, is much greater than the magnetic length. Okay, so then what I can do, right, I can, since the length scale in my problem here is the magnetic length, right, I can just consider at a given point, right, I can say that the disorder can be expanded to the linear order, right, near a given point. Right, x. Minus x naught, y minus y naught. Okay, and this is just like electric field, right? But just not along x, but along some arbitrary direction, which is the gradient of the potential. Okay, so that's why, yeah, at least in this limit, right? This is essentially all I need to know.
So what about the previous case in the top blackboard? Why do you call that clean?
Ah, you mean this example we considered with the Lorentz transformation, right?
Yeah. Why do you call it?
So this is essentially, well, in that case I had no disorder, right? That's why everything was translationally invariant, right? So I was just making an argument that disorder is essential, right? That without disorder you can never get quantization of the whole conductivity. Because the whole conductivity would just go linearly with the carrier density. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. So, we find, right, solving this Hamiltonian that the energy, that the wave function stays the same, right, except I have to shift the value of the guiding center position. But the energy changes, right? So energy becomes dependent on the ky, right? So first of all, there is a term which is just the Landau level energy. Then there is a term which depends on the guiding center position, and then there is a constant shift, which only depends on the. On the electric and magnetic field. And this you would recognize as the drift velocity in the crossed electric and magnetic fields. So now, right, I can calculate the value of the current carried by these modified states. And so essentially I need to do the same thing, right? Except I have to shift I can just use this expression, right? But I have to shift x to x prime there. And because of that, you see that it would no longer be zero, right? So jy averaged would be. So let me not worry about the prefactor. So it would be important for me that it's non-zero. So it's dx. To the minus 1 over 2 L squared x minus x prime, right? So x minus x prime squared times then this guy is x minus x, right? And then there is another factor from the ket wave function. So now I can just use this relation between x and x prime, right, and shift it, and then I'll get that this expression becomes x minus x prime minus e times electric field m omega c squared. Okay. Then this is little x. Integrating this expression gives you zero, right? Because this is asymmetric, but this one will give you non-zero, right? So you see that. You see that the and if I keep all the numerical factors, I find that the average value of current in the y direction is just given by the by this drift velocity times e. Okay, so this tells you that if you apply an electric field in the x direction, right, states start drifting, right? They carry current in the perpendicular direction, and this is really generalization of the you know classical drift in the crossed ENB fields, right? So drift crossed fields. So I could. I could also I could have gotten this answer also by just looking at the group velocity, right? Because I have my new dispersion relation, and I could say, okay, so the group velocity would be 1 over h d e k y over k y, right? And then it just becomes e e h d x k y over d k y becomes the drift velocity, right? So it is constant. So it would also, for our intuition, it would be helpful to see how the electric field changes the energies of the Landau levels, right? So before we had discrete bands. Let's say if I plot the energy as a function of the guiding center position, right? But what electric field does, it tilts these bands. Okay, so they're no longer flat. Now, this is already, this is quite simple, but that actually gives us enough to understand where the whole quantization comes from. Okay, so let's now consider a realistic finite size sample. And I will just make one simplifying assumption. I will consider sample which is infinite along y direction, in which all disorder depends only on the x coordinate, right? So it will be sample that is infinite in the y direction, right? But would be finite in the x direction, right? And all the disorder would have translational symmetry along y. Okay. Then I can, I already have this picture, right? So I can just guess the spectrum as a function of the guiding center position, right? So if I consider some given Landau level, as long as I'm considering guiding center positions which are somewhere inside here, right? They will just follow the disorder profile, right? So the energy would be, it would follow disorder profile. So sometimes it would go up, sometimes it would go down, right? Something like that, we'll do something like that. But then question is what would happen as you come to the edge, right? So the edge, I mean, what is the edge? The edge tells you that electrons are prohibited from going there, right? And I could model it by a smooth confining potential, right? So which just goes all the way to infinity. So then it tells me that here the energies of my Landau level should bend up. And the same, and this is for the zero Landau level, but of course I didn't use anywhere that it was zero Landau level. So for the second Landau level, it will be exactly the same story. Okay, and so on. So all Landau levels, they do something in the bulk following disorder, and then they shoot to the infinity at the edge. But now, if I consider the limit when chemical potential lies between Landau levels, okay, such that the only states, right, the only states at the Fermi energy are here at the edge. Right, so if I consider, so this picture is simple, but it has important consequences, right? So first one is that if chemical potential mu minus the energy of the Landau level is greater or similar than the typical disorder fluctuation, right? This tells me that all states in the bulk are below Fermi level. And the only conducting states are at the edge. Conducting edge states which are such that at each edge chemical potential crosses lambda level exactly once. Right? So you have one edge state at every edge. One mode per edge. So now another important thing is that these edge states, right, they propagate in the opposite direction at the opposite edges, right? So if I look at this edge state, right, then the group velocity here would be d epsilon over dky or d epsilon over dx, right? Because ky and x are proportional, so it would be negative, right? And d epsilon over dky here would be positive. Right, so this tells me that, let's say, this one must propagate in the negative ky direction, in the negative y direction here, and this one should propagate in the positive direction. Right. So this really looks like a quantum wire, right? Except the incoming and outgoing wave are spatially separated. Right. So it's really very, very unusual quantum wire with a single channel in which channels are spatially separated, in which counterpropagating modes are spatially separated, right? And this would be the story for any other Landau level as well, right? So if I repeat this logic, I would get that for the second Landau level, there is a channel here and channel here, which are going in the opposite direction. So and now, well, of course you could also, right, you could also interpret this quasi-classically, which also gives useful intuition, right? So if you think about cyclotron motion, right, then then you know that in the bulk of the sample, electrons just perform periodic motion and don't carry current, right? So let's say they move this way. But at the edges of the sample, they can bounce off the edges, right? And they can, this way, there are the skipping orbit trajectories which propagate only one way along the edge. And in the opposite direction at the other edge. Well, so you can already guess, right? So we have essentially a quantum wire in which channels are spatially separated, so which tells you that it's very hard for them to backscatter, right? Because in order to go from, let's say, this side to this side, right, the electron has to go through the big region which is gapped, right? So which is really, really classically forbidden, right? And there is no reasonable perturbation which mixes the incoming and outgoing wave, right? So this tells you that the conductance of this in the situation should be E squared over H. Okay, so but I can also, so I can really ask what happens if I measure the whole conductivity. So what would I do, right? So I would pass I would attach source and drain like this. And I would measure the drop, voltage drop, right, across the sample. So I'll have, well, essentially, I'll have a voltmeter, right, and measure the potential difference across the sample. Now, the only states which are carrying current are at the edge, right? So I can write right away that the current let's say this would be right channel, this would be left channel. Right, this is just the number of states. Velocity and the distribution function. That's okay, yeah. All right, so you see that right away I get the expression which is minus E over H, just the difference of chemical potentials in the right and left channel. And now, of course, in this situation, right, if I have some bias between source and drain, which is V, right, then the all the carriers in the right channel come from the source, so they come with chemical potential V, and all the carriers in the left channel come from the drain with chemical potential zero, right? So this is exactly, this gives me the voltage that I applied. But the whole voltage, right, likewise, chemical potential measured in this channel, right, this is an ideal channel. So it stays at the same chemical potential as it started with, right? It didn't backscatter anywhere. So the whole voltage would be also given by simply by E, I guess without minus sign, right, times the difference of the chemical potentials. Or I could express it in terms of current, right? And I would get that this is simply, so from here, so I guess so it's divided by E, right? So it becomes H over E squared times the current. So the whole conductivity I would measure here, right, would be simply given by E squared over H. And if I had more channels, right, by repeating this, I would get the answer, which is, so if I have, let's say, n channels, I would have an answer which is n times E squared over H. So each channel contributes E squared over H to the whole conductivity. So you see that the whole conductivity becomes quantized when an integer number of Landau levels is filled, right? So going back to the picture that we started from, now we can understand what are these magical densities, right? At which quantization occurs. So let's say first plateau, its center lies when you're filling just one Landau level, right? So which means that the density should be it should be 1/2 pi L squared, right? This is just the density of states in the single Landau level. Then second one occurs when I'm filling two of them, right, and so on, right? So it's really, I could introduce the filling factor, which is the number of filled Landau levels. Which is dimensionless and which is just n divided by the density of states in the single Landau level. And then these plateaus occur at integer filling factors, right? integer filling factor is new. So now thing that we still did not answer yet, right, is why do we have a plateau? So why does it stay pinned at this value of the at this value of the Hall conductivity? And so to understand this, we should really think about the nature of the states in the bulk. Okay, so we should understand which states are we filling, right, as we go across this plateau. So we'll discuss that, but first let me ask you if you have any questions about this. Yeah.
I'm a bit confused there with the symbols. So mu r and mu l are the chemical potentials of?
Of the edges.
The edges. So the leads give each edge a different chemical potential, or what? What is giving them the different? Is it the leads that's giving them?
Yes. Because you know, if I want to measure whole conductivity, what do? Right, I attach lead, I pass a current, right? So I would apply some bias, right? So source would have higher chemical potentials than the drain, and since all the carriers here, right, they're chiral, they go one way, right? So they all come from here, right? So here mu r should be EV, right? But mu L should be chemical potential of the drain, which is zero, right? So you have more carriers in this channel, right? And they're carrying extra current.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so my question is there. So my question is there. So there are you plot two figures, which is the relation between epsilon and x.
Yes.
And sorry, what does that mean?
So this means you see I can label the states by their momentum, right? Or by their momentum along y, or equivalently by their guiding center position. So I just plotted how the energies depend, right, using the formulas I obtained earlier.
What is the difference between the left and right?
So this one, no disorder, no electric field. Right, in this one, constant E field along x. It tells you that electric field tilts. So this is quite an intuitive picture, right? Because recall that the wave functions in the x direction, right, they're localized like this, right? So at on a length scale of the order of magnetic length. So excuse me. So if you apply smooth electric field, right, it will just in the leading order, you could just consider what is the average value of the electric field, right? What kind of potential it induces at the guiding center position of a given state, right? So this would just tell you that the whole band would tilt, right? So if you have localized states and you apply electric field, right, their energy is just, you should just add the local value of the potential. Now, of course, if you have extended states, it's not going to be like that, right? Because they're not localized at a given point. But here, as long as electric field changes slowly, this is a good approximation.
So what's the relation between this one and the fractional
monomial effect? So you'll have to learn a little bit more to understand fractional random Hall effect.
Okay.
So not so fast. First understand this.
I wonder in the experiment, do we already tune this density
magnetic field. Yeah, this is a good question. So historically, right, this was discovered in silicon-based transistors, right, by accident essentially in 1980. There of course people were changing magnetic field because those devices are such that you already have some carrier density that you've introduced by dopants, right? And then changing magnetic field, you can vary this filling factor, right? So you can swipe through different plateaus. Now in the new materials, let's say in graphene, people can tune both because difference is that graphene is a two-dimensional material, right? So you can dope it with a gate, right? So you can just place a big piece of metal near it, and by controlling the potential on this piece of metal, you can change the carrier density. Right? And this is for many things and for studying different regimes, right? It's a very big advantage, even though it's just a practical thing, but it allows one to get to new interesting regimes. Mm-hmm. Okay, guys, any more questions about this? So, okay, if not, so let's stop here. Then next time we'll finish with this and also go further.